Well, the idea of surrender is not valued in the West. We're terrible at surrender, you and I, deny that there are limits to our control. To many of us, surrender sounds like throwing in the white flag, giving up. I'm reminded of Winston Churchill's quote, "It rings in my ears, we shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets, we shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender." We shall never surrender. We like to feel that we are in control. Control of ourselves, the trajectory of our lives, sometimes control of other people, of our beliefs, their beliefs, their actions, their feelings. Control of our dog or our cat. Well, this month's theme is surrender, is letting go. It's a month-long theme, and here I am cramming it into one set of reflections. And so what I first did was draw up a laundry list. I'm very fond of lists. A list of what we might let go. So here goes. First of all, stuff. Now, many of you know I am a bookaholic. I usually drag along just dozens of books here. Like Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise, I feel that there is nothing like that tactile sensation of holding a book, of turning the pages, of underlining, making notes in the margins like a medieval scholar. Give me a book. I do not own a Nook. This past week, I took dozens of books to our church in Duluth for a church book sale. That just leaves probably a couple, 3,000 books left. From my basement to the third floor, I checked there. Every single room has, if not books, at least a series of magazines. So I like my stuff. I like my stuff. I have a story, a history of almost every object in our house. From whom I got it, or why I bought it, where I got it, what it means to me. And so downsizing is going to be a royal battle for me. So some of us are better at getting rid of stuff or not accumulating stuff in the first place. But I remember with a bit of nostalgia, almost 40 years ago, I moved to Alaska with 3 suitcases, 4 boxes of books, and a cat. "'Tis a gift to be simple. 'Tis a gift to be free. 'Tis a gift to come down where we ought to be. And now I hold on to lots and lots more stuff." So I'm starting to confront that. What do I let go, and how do I let go ever so cautiously? Okay, can't swear from the pulpit. Okay. Here, try not to. So, I have been reading the latest Barbara Kingsolver book. It is called Unsheltered. And it's about 2 families. They live 125 years apart. So one is in 1875, and the other family lives in 2005. And they live in this very same community. It's called Vineland, New Jersey. It is an actual town in New Jersey, a small community. So the main character in the 1875 portion of the book is a science teacher, a high school science teacher. Now, this is 1875, so 15 years before this, in 1869, Charles Darwin has published Origin of the Species. Just caused a tremendous upheaval. You know, in November, we're going to celebrate the 160th anniversary of that book. Now, Vineland was founded, the real Vineland was founded as a place for folks to return the land, to the land to grow grapes. Apparently that part of New Jersey is great for grapes and berries and vegetables. It's actually the community where Thomas Welch figured out how to process grapes and not ferment them. Welch's grape juice? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Vineland was also a place founded for spiritualists. Where spiritualists might explore the nature of God and the hereafter, gather for seances, hear lectures on the spirit realm and God's divine plan.
So Darwin's theory that this science teacher was trying to propound was a dangerous theory. It tried to challenge long-held beliefs in a creation by godly design, the personal intervention of a divine creator in that 7 days of creation. Hard to give up long-held beliefs. You know, the Catholic Church didn't accept the idea of evolution formally until 1950. And some folks still don't believe in evolution. According to their demographics, 10% of the general population among evangelicals, almost 50%, don't believe in that idea of evolution. So it's very hard to give up beliefs that we've grown up with. You know, I'm reminded of the belief that the Earth circles the sun instead of the other way around. Galileo was demonized for that belief, for bringing up that belief. And it wasn't until 1820 that the Catholic Church licensed a book that treated heliocentrism as a physical fact. Now, I was raised a Roman Catholic, so it's very interesting to me to see this literally evolution of beliefs in the church and in myself. It's hard to let go of beliefs even in the face of cascades of evidence. You know, and by the time I had reached Alaska, it was a little town in southeastern Alaska, Sitka, Alaska, I'd given up many of the religious beliefs of my childhood. And I actually found Unitarianism up in that little town of, relatively small town of 6,000 people. So what are the beliefs we've given up on? What are the beliefs that we hold on to? So, stuff and beliefs. Next on my list was control of others. Letting go of our idea that we can control others. That's hard for a lot of us. It's especially parents. It's hard to kind of mold those kids and suddenly discover that, no, they're just going to be who they are. Someone suggests we remember that to let go does not mean we stop caring. It means we can't do the inner work for someone else. To let go doesn't mean we cut ourselves off from other people or that other person. It's the realization that we can't control them. Many of us discover this going to Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner or some holiday celebration with our family, where we are confronted with people who hold very different beliefs than we do. How much do we let go of the idea that we can change them? To let go is to recognize that our power is limited, which means that the outcome is often not in our hands. Just like Bruce, you can try different methods, but finally you accommodate that to what will work for the whole group. And to let go is not to try to change or blame another. It's to focus on what we need to do for ourselves. So in my travels across the continent, I sang with the Montana Women's Chorus, and we sang a Harmony Grisman tune. In life, practice only this. Letting each other go, letting each other go. Oh, holding on comes easily. We don't need to learn it. Holding on comes easily. We don't need to learn it. Practice letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. So not just of each other, but of lots of other stuff that is just ideas, stuff that is not of use anymore. Well, along with discarding this idea of controlling others, sometimes how do we control ourselves? And that maybe should be the focus. Can we control our attitude, our responses, our reactions, our words? And
Wayne Dyer writes about the 7 steps for overcoming ego's hold on you. And it's a short compilation. And Dyer tells us that stop being offended. Much to our absolute surprise, sometimes that comment is not just about me. It's as much about the other person's life as it is about me. Let go of our need to win or always be right. Let go of our need to be superior or identify ourselves on the basis of our house, our spouse, our education, our reputation, our achievements, our stuff. Let go of our need to have more. It's hard to do in this environment where we're always bombarded with all that other stuff we need. From coffee and books. Can we control our attitude, our responses, our reactions, our words? And yes, with a lot of self-awareness, a lot of practice, a lot of mindfulness. If we are lucky enough to live long enough, we get lots of practice in making mistakes and lots of practice in figuring out who we are, what we can and can't do, how to do better, how to respond differently. You know, our ongoing series of nonviolent communication deals with one way of responding differently. Well, when I thought about controlling ourselves, and I also thought in general of controlling our lives, and of course I thought of a song and of a story. And first the song, it's another Judy Fiel song. She was the director of the Women's Chorus in Montana. Holding on, for dear life we're holding on. Holding on, precious life we're holding on. Long on dreams, short on time. Long on dreams, short on time. Moment by moment by moment. Moment by moment by moment. Moment by moment by moment. Moment by moment by moment, holding on. For dear life, we're holding on. Holding on, precious life, we're holding on. Long on dreams, short on time. So then the story. Now, you've already figured out by this time that you're going to have to somehow figure out, fill in the holes and make the connections. This is just a series of reflections, a laundry list. So, the story. Almost 20 years ago now, 20 years ago, that can't be right. Well, maybe it is. 20 years ago, I was in a class taking a medical ethics class, and I wrote a paper on euthanasia, which at that time was also called assisted suicide, and these days more often is called death with dignity. And I started with a couple scenarios, and to quote myself, a number of years ago, Frank, an acquaintance from church, and that was the Unitarian Fellowship up in Sitka, married and the father of 2 young boys, dying from lung cancer, took a handful of pills and ended his life on his own terms. That was how a friend from the same church, a most liberal denomination and one that struggles with the morality of euthanasia, described Frank's death, whispering the details to me. He didn't want to burden his family, you know. He just didn't want to die in pain. And then there was the money. He didn't want to use up all their savings. And the second scenario that I began that paper with, that summer of 2001, another acquaintance, also from my faith community, died after a year-long encounter with cancer. Beth died at home with family and friends gathered around her. In the last week of her life, Beth chose the songs she wanted sung at her memorial service. The Montana Women's Chorus sang of Beth's resting safe in the arms of her village, of her love of singing with us, and of her strong woman's voice, working for a more just world. Course members also talked about what gifts Beth had given each of us. Beth allowed us to care for her in one final musical celebration, and her final request somehow gave us permission to ask each other for the same gift of care at the end of our lives. So holding on, letting go, when knowing when to hold them, when to fold them, sweet surrender or holding on for dear life. So, the last little bit of the list, the idea of in Buddhism. In Buddhism, detachment is cultivated. Detachment is not a failure to care, but an acceptance of what is beyond our control. So for Buddhists, there are four noble truths that describe life. Every stage of life comes with suffering. We all suffer. Our cravings, our desires exacerbate that suffering and catch us in an endless cycle of ego-driven life. We may end this cycle, attain nirvana, a transcendent state in which there is no suffering or desire or sense of self, no need for reincarnation and doing it better the next time. And the end of this cycle of suffering comes through an eightfold path of discipline and mindfulness. Now, this is an exceedingly simplified condensation of a life system that takes years to understand, much less to master. And next week, you'll hear somebody who actually knows what he's talking about. Now, I took a Buddhist class. I took a Buddhism class in college, and then I took the lab, which was wonderful. We learned different ways of meditation. But I'm not a Buddhist. But another way to describe this way of life is the idea of impermanence and our deep desire, our fallback attitude of wanting permanence in our lives. We don't want change. What the heck are these new chairs doing? Don't we still have the pews? Why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? Who changed the color of this darn church? And who put that big sign up? I know that there's been talk of every single change that happens in this small place. We love our place. We love, I know that. Early in my marriage, I discovered that I sometimes think out loud, and I can remember thinking, while my beloved spouse was around saying, I wonder what the couch would look like there and the chair there. And I left home for a while and I came back and everything was moved to where I, it doesn't really work there. Oh, shoot. But Buddhists ask us to let go of that idea of permanence. All is change. Permanence is an illusion. Nothing stays the same. We're always holding on, then having to let go. Paul Reps has this lovely little book called Zen Telegrams. It's a book with calligraphy type sorts of paintings. And he writes, "Who can say I am Japanese, American, African, Canadian, when in the next day she may be a butterfly?" Who can say? Henry Miller writes, "I know what the cure is. It is to give up, to relinquish, to surrender, so that our little hearts may beat in unison with the great heart of the world." And certainly in Buddhism, the idea of foregoing that cycle of reincarnation, of saying, yes, I am enlightened, of stopping that cycle of suffering and birth and rebirth, going to a place of nirvana, which is kind of a mix. I know that I'm mixing kind of Hinduism and Buddhism. But in Buddhism, there's also the idea of becoming a bodhisattva, someone who is enlightened, who understands this permeability of being a part of everything, of not being unduly attached to anything, but who decides not to be, to go off to nirvana, but to come back and help others engage with the great heart of the world, who works towards achieving or advancing everyone to recognize that interconnectedness of all, who lets go and lets others in, who teaches how to let go of some measure of our fierce sense of separateness. So detachment may not be the correct term for Westerners. And I know that when I was in my Buddhism class, that idea of detachment sounded like rejecting the world and rejecting my relationships. But I think instead we can think of a clear-eyed, gentle engagement with the world, no strings or expectations attached. And that may describe this overwhelming experience of inextricable interconnection. Like our middle song, Do You Hear? We hear all the dreams, all the dares, all the sighs, all the prayers. They are yours, mine, and theirs. And we hear. We hear. So to answer suffering and separateness, hopes and aspirations in an attitude free of ego, filled with empathy, acting out of mindfulness. So that's it. That's it. That's my deal on surrender, holding on, letting go, let the dog train us, let others in, live if only for brief moments, like a fish in the water, like a bird in the air. Hold on when we must, let go when we can, come down where we ought to be. Michelle started with the serenity prayer, also from Judy Fiel. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And the courage to change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. May it be so. May we make it so. Blessed be, and amen.